Lyubka himself, Alexandria said.
You're always too kind to me, Alexandria. I know you definitely approve of me, the man said, as he swooped Tao up in his arms and spun her around. Hi.
Hey, is it true? Did you miss your flight for me?
Tao shook her head, but her eyes deceived her.
Of course not, Jeff. Had a few business things to take care of here. It just so happened I was able to catch you on your last night here before you went off to Singapore for a few months. Pure coincidence is all.
Jeff flashed her an award-winning smile, and she melted. His smile looked just like his dating profile. Genuine, authentic, and a little mischievous. Despite Alexandria looking at his dating profile and saying that his smile looked like it was full of red flags, STDs, and the markings of a serial gaslighter, Tao didn't listen to her. She never listened to anyone who ever warned her of her terrible choice in men, because she simply didn't want to hear it. Tao was starting to grow attached to him, and she never grew attached to anyone. Not in this climate, where cute foreigners, tourists, and expats flowed freely every night, like they were living in Roman times, a never-ending turnstile of hot men in a transient city. Meeting men was the easy part. Falling in love was unheard of. Jeff wrapped his muscular arms around her, and she pressed her body closer to his. His eyes darted down her dress, and she pressed her body even deeper, allowing him to see everything. She wanted him to have all of her, especially the parts that he couldn't see. For Tao, it was easy to get naked with someone, but it was much harder being intimate. There was the Asian daughter lie that she gave to her mother earlier, the cool girl lie she gave to Jeff just now, and the real lie that she told herself every day, that she was ready for a real relationship and to fall in love. But she was afraid to admit that she was scared. She was scared of Jeff, or any man, for only ever seeing her as someone to call when they were just passing through Saigon. She was tired of always being an afterthought, never a forethought. Tao felt her phone vibrate, and she briefly broke away from Jeff. She glanced at the screen, only to see that it was from her distant cousin, Elaine Lum. She read the clipped message on her home screen without expanding the message. Hey girl, heard you're coming back soon? Before you leave Viet, need favor. She raised her eyebrow, annoyed that Elaine was interrupting her. Tao attempted to hide the message from Jeff, swiping the notification away quickly. Her mood turned sour. Why was her family so embarrassing? They treated Tao like a drug mule, asking her for favors all the time, shepherding things back and forth from Vietnam to the States. Last time, it was smuggling American cash to other relatives and friends who lived in Vietnam, or requesting she bring back dried goods or illegal plants. Tao hated that her family was like this, just so unrefined. Everything okay? Jeff asked.
Tao looked up and planted a cheerful smile on her face. All good. Just a work thing. It was another one of her white lies. A lie to make her life back home more palatable. Familial responsibilities like this is why she kept staying away. Why couldn't her older sisters, Priscilla and Thuy, deal with this for her? Just because they barely spoke to each other didn't mean she should be the one to handle shit like this. She flicked her phone on silent and grabbed Jeff's hand to pull him to the ledge of the rooftop so that they could people watch from high up in their perch. She needed a distraction. Now. Jeff flagged a waiter to order drinks for them. She stared at his rugged profile, and she squeezed his ass playfully.
You're going to break my heart one day, aren't you? She asked him.
He looked down at her and laughed.
Come on, that only works if people love each other. We're just having fun, right?
He winked at her. Tao felt herself freeze up and opened her mouth to protest, but she felt her phone vibrate again in her pocket, and she knew it was another message from Elaine, or her mother, or somebody from her family. She swallowed her words and flashed him that cool girl smile again and gave a weak laugh.
Right.
Now he squeezed her bottom
and kissed her forehead. Behind him, she could see all her girlfriends mouthing at her to cut him out of her life. Alexandria turned her fingers into a pair of scissors and began snipping at the air. Tao flipped them all off and mouthed at them to shut up. She focused on the cute guy in front of her, who didn't want any of the things she wanted, but she forced herself to believe that he could change for her, one day. It was another Tao lie. But this time, she gave it to herself, because he provided a good enough distraction from the fact that she was lonely in a city of 9 million people. 10. Mrs. Quien Lam. Mrs. Quien Lam arrived at the temple an hour early to avoid the crowd. She liked to appear early, especially before her two daughters, Elaine and Christine. They always came to the temple with 50 pounds of makeup on, eyelashes heavier than brick, cat eyes sharper than a machete. As much as she loved them, she needed silence for this. She came to kneel before her ancestors and ask for guidance, because whatever was infecting the women in their family was dangerously close to spreading to her daughters. Mrs. Lum was the only one in that temple, and that usually indicated desperation. She took off her shoes before entering the golden arches of the temple, grabbed a floor pillow that was stacked in the corner, and headed to the front. She stopped before a 50-foot golden Buddha statue that towered over her 4-foot-11-inch frame. She tipped her head back to gaze up at the statue's upaya hand gesture, which symbolized fearlessness after reaching enlightenment. As Mrs. Lum fell down on her knees and began to chant, asking the Buddha to help guide her, she dug deep within her soul. She prayed, asking to help her find a way to allow forgiveness into her family. She wondered if there would ever be a day where everyone could forgive each other, before another decade passed them by. She asked if every mistake that had led them to this moment could be washed away. Mrs. Lum was not one to beg, or accept beggars back into her life. And yet here she was, begging Buddha for answers, wondering how to fix her broken heart that had seemingly outlasted her broken family by a millennium. After the morning session ended at the temple, Mrs. Lum and her daughters headed to their flagship nail salon that they owned. Mrs. Lum forced her daughters, Elaine and Christine, to carry in the Costco-sized supplies from the car, while she sat in a massage chair, setting it on the highest pressure, and kicked off her shoes, drained from all the family drama.
"Christ! What are in these boxes? They're so heavy!" Christine cried out. "I'm going to chip an acrylic. Can't we get one of the guys to carry them in? Like, I thought I was going to do more of the paperwork around here today. Not so much manual labor."
"I'm sorry, do you see men around here? If you do, please direct me to them. I haven't had sex in months." Elaine snapped as she rolled her eyes at her younger sister.
"Stop complaining. You're in a nail salon. It's the emergency room for broken nails. I think you'll survive if you chip a nail."
Mrs. Lum called out from the chair.
"Both of you need to stop talking and hurry up. I need you to make another run for supplies for the coffee shop after this."
Even Elaine cursed at her mother's endless requests. Mrs. Lum had been making her girls work the nail salon and coffee shop since they'd been cut from her umbilical cords. She was used to ordering them around, both as a mother and as their boss. Mrs. Lum would balk at all the social workers who would come sniffing around in their early years, saying that her girls weren't allowed to work, citing something called child labor laws, and that she was in violation of them. Americans were so soft and doughy, like the inside of a bank gam. No wonder they didn't win the war, Mrs. Lum would think to herself every time the social workers backed down. Mrs. Lum closed her eyes and allowed herself to take in her kingdom, one arm over her head, while her other hand instinctively went up to her earlobe to tug on her jade hoop earrings, a tick she had whenever she was lost in thought. Her thriving businesses were her oasis, far removed from any family drama, except from her nuclear family. She couldn't help but rerun the scene of Mai leaving them like that, with so much pain in her eyes.
She'd seen that pain in her sister's eyes over and over again throughout the years. And yet, Mrs. Lum always stayed silent. The day their mother forced Mai to get married, the day their mother forced Mai to give up her ownership over the Santa Ana home, the day their mother chose her first daughter, Game, over all of them. Each time, Mrs. Lum had left her sister to fend for herself. The guilt began seeping in her body. She knew that she'd never really been there for her older sister. Mrs. Lum tried to shake the guilt from her. What was there to do? There was nothing she could do. The women in her family were born stubborn and would die stubborn. She needed to focus on running a healthy and thriving business for her own daughter's survival. Her nail salon was crowded with customers. A mix of English and Vietnamese filled the air, and her eardrums fluttered like a fly on the wall, trying to catch any gossip that she could, in either language. Girlfriends sat side by side, drinking champagne with one hand, while their other hand was being tended to by their Vietnamese nail technicians. David still watches through all of my Instagram stories. Every single one. All the way to the end. Girl, he's obsessed with you. Lock your doors. It's the Gemini in him. Jesus fucking Christ. I didn't know you dated a Gemini. You know me. I love toxic energy. When Mrs. Lum grew tired of their humdrum white people problems, she switched over to the technicians for the real gossip. I was at TNK Market the other day, and this poor old woman collapsed on the floor, Vân said in Vietnamese. She shouted it from table one to Ngoc, who was working at table two. Also, look at this woman's jewelry. How much do you think her necklace alone costs? How do you think she got it? Ngoc quickly glanced at the customer, a gorgeous young blonde whose neck and ears were dripping with diamonds, and she cackled loudly. She responded back in Vietnamese to Vân. The necklace? At least a few thousand. At least. Also, she didn't come in with a ring around her finger, so you know she's got some rich man buying her gifts in exchange for you know what. He also paid for her breasts. Look at them. The earrings are fake, though. You can tell when it catches the light. Fake, fake, fake. She's clearly not doing a good job giving him what he wants. It was Vân's turn to cackle loudly. You're terrible. Not like you can do a better job. You probably haven't been with a man since you left Vietnam. The most they'll give you is a pat on the back, if you're lucky. Have you ever even been in love? Ngoc sputtered. I've been with plenty of men here, all types of men, and they'd be lucky to have a woman like me on their arm. Besides, only stupid people fall in love. I'm far too beautiful and smart to ever do that. Look at your blonde customer. She's smart too. Just take the diamonds, nothing else. Get assets and move on. Those men should be worried if you're hanging on their arms, probably pickpocketing their watches and wallets. That's the only way you'll be getting anything from them, Vân retorted. All the Vietnamese nail technicians who manned tables 3 through 10 howled with laughter. Each took their turn to roast Ngoc, while all their white customers kept trying to talk over their laughter to their white friends, pretending that the women in front of them, massaging their hands, didn't exist, as if they were nothing more than the help. Mrs. Lum chuckled quietly in her massage chair, her eyes still closed. She loved the women she employed. When the Zung women parted ways a decade ago, Mrs. Lum sought sisterhood in other ways, as all wolves that break away from their pack do. These women had become more of a family to her than her own family, even though all the women were Nhieu Tuyen, a bunch of busybodies. The old woman had this big mole on the right side of her cheek. I only noticed it because I was admiring the jade Buddha necklace she wore around her neck. I've never seen that color jade before. A strange ombre color of dark purple that faded into a dark green. And I thought, what a unique necklace to match such a unique face. Mrs. Lum caught a snippet of Vân's description of the old woman who fell at TNK Food Market. Mrs. Lum's eyes shot open, and she sprung out of her massage chair. She bolted to Vân's table quickly, nearly knocking over the blonde with the fake earrings along the way. Describe that woman again. Don't leave out any detail,
even if you think it's minor. I need every detail, from her hair to her shoes. Now!
Mrs. Lum instructed Vun, like a drill sergeant aggressively pushing for results from their reports. Startled, Vun almost ruined the custom Swarovski nail art she was working on. She stammered, complaining that Mrs. Lum was going to make her start over. Mrs. Lum's eyes bulged out of her sockets, and she barked at Vun to get over it and to speak faster. Vun's voice was irritated as she repeated the description. Mole on right cheek, jade Buddha necklace, purple hues that cut diagonally across, but turned into an inky dark green color. Spectacles that hung low above her nose. A purple matching silk set with a white knitted vest over the blouse. And of course, a fake Louis Vuitton tote bag that hung casually off her arm. A signature Zhuang style. Mrs. Lum almost fainted at the description and grabbed onto Vun to steady herself.
Was she alone? Was she okay? Did an ambulance come? Speak faster, for Buddha's sake, Vun!
Jai-ai, you look like a rabid animal.
I don't know.
Vun cried out in exasperation and tried to swat her arm away. But Mrs. Lum's acrylic nails were sharper than any knife as they dug even deeper into Vun's arm.
Everyone tried to help, but the man that was with her only spoke Mandarin, so I don't know what happened to her after the ambulance took her.
Mrs. Lum removed her nails and collapsed in the chair next to Vun.
That woman you saw falling at the market, she's my mother.
She burst into tears, remembering the reunion a month ago. She had left wondering if that was the last time she would see her mother for another 10 years. The guilt crept up instantaneously, overwhelming her from all angles. She never stood up for her older sister, and now she felt guilty for not standing up for her mother the last time they were all together. Was it too late? Vun gasped.
The woman who collapsed was your mother?
Mrs. Lum could barely nod her head before she picked up her phone to call her sisters, her hands trembling. Her mother had been a widow twice over. For her entire life, grief had followed her, like a black crow that remembers every debt that needs to be paid off and can categorize every face as friend or foe. Her mother was like that. Yes or no, immediate forgiveness or eternal grudge, in or out. Mrs. Lee Mingzung of Gantha from South Vietnam, who now resided in Garden Grove, Orange County, at the youthful age of 88, had never strayed from any resolute decision she ever made. She didn't believe in regrets or dwelling in the past. And now, Mrs. Lum needed to do the same. She forgave Mai on the spot. Mrs. Lum sat there waiting for one of her sisters to pick up her call. She wondered if her prayers had been answered this morning from the temple, if the Zhuang women were graced by the Buddha with the ability to heal as a family before it was too late. Was it too late? Mrs. Lum was not worried about her mother leaving this life with a mountain of regrets, because it was always the living who had them, never the dead. She watched Elaine and Christine, who were still moving heavy boxes to and from the parking lot to the store, and she felt more guilt seeping over her. She wondered if she'd been too hard on them, and if they resented her or not. She insisted that her daughters never leave the Orange County bubble. She needed them close to her. Unlike her sisters, whose daughters were scattered in all corners of the world, Mrs. Lum refused to let her daughters go more than a few miles from her, because she was secretly afraid that if she were to ever collapse one day, alone at a supermarket, that not even her daughters would come to her aid.
The funeral. 11. Mrs. Lee Mingzung and her 4 daughters. Mrs. Lee Mingzung had seen her death coming. In fact, she saw it all. She saw the 1,000 lifetimes she had lived before, and she saw the 1,000s more waiting for her in every reincarnation. In her last moments on Earth, Mrs. Zhuang touched her neck, where her jade Buddha necklace had resided for over 70 years. as soon as she felt the coolness of the stone. She remembered the day her mother had passed on the necklace to her, and she knew it was time. Her mother had lain on a mat, bundled up in layers of linen, despite the raging heat outside. A young Li was tending to her dying mother, dabbing cold water on her forehead with a wet rag, trying her best to keep her stable. Li forced herself to put on a brave face, knowing that death was close. But she struggled to offer the right comforting words, since they hadn't spoken in months. Ever since Li turned down the hand of a young man her mother had attempted to match her with, a hairline fracture had penetrated their relationship. As Li moved the cloth down to her mother's neck, her hand accidentally grazed the jade necklace, and she flinched, feeling the coolness against her skin. She'd always been wary of the necklace, only because it was rather unusual. It wasn't like the common jade jewelry that the other women wore in the village. It was a dark, rich, purple jade that quietly bled into a dark green. Normally, it was the other way around. Li wrung out more water from the cloth and quietly pressed it against her mother's delicate frame, avoiding the necklace. She didn't have the strength to meet her mother's hooded eyes because she wasn't ready to let go yet, despite all the ugly words that had been exchanged months prior.
"This necklace belonged to your great-great-grandmother, Wang Zung,"
her mother said in a raspy voice, breaking the silence. "Wasn't she the one responsible for the curse on this family?" Li asked. "Why would you wear such a cursed object around your neck? Don't we already have enough bad luck following the women in this family?" They finally made eye contact. Her mother's eyes bored into Li, and this time, she was looking at her differently, possibly seeing her for who she was for the first time in her life. Before, the only looks they could give each other were disappointment and scowls. Her mother didn't respond. Instead, she attempted to sit up, her lungs struggling from the sheer physicality of such a simple act. Despite Li's protests to lie down, she managed to get herself in an upright position. She took off the jade necklace and wrapped it in Li's hands, her heavy breathing a reminder of the limited time they had together.
"Was I a disappointment, Ma?"
Li asked quietly, unsure what to do with the necklace. It just lay there, waiting for her to accept it and give it a new home for a new generation. Her mother's eyes began to flicker, fading in and out. She fought to stay present. She managed to close Li's fist around the necklace, her hand lingering.
"No, Li. I am the one who is a disappointment. I should have done more as your mother, instead of blaming you for things that were out of your control. One day, Li, you will be a mother, and you will know what sacrifice means. I know you will be a better mother than I ever was."
Li didn't remember much of what happened after. She just remembered the wind that day, how it felt against her puffy cheeks as she wept against her mother's lifeless body. It had been another unremarkable, sticky summer evening in the southernmost tip of Vietnam, and the wind never traveled this far down the coast because it often got tired before it could ever reach it. But this time, the wind made the taxing journey south, braving the humidity, just for Li. It came to help dry her tears. War had just broken out between the North and the South. There were rumors of the United States intervening, and her father was gone. She was unsure which side he was fighting for, or if he was even alive, because she couldn't remember if the North or the South were for or against communism, and which side was right, and which side wasn't. All she knew was that imperialism was bad, but isn't that what both sides were fighting against? But she didn't care about any of it anymore, because she had just become an orphan. She didn't have to pick a side, because she had nobody to fight for. She mourned her mother's passing near the bank of the Mekong Delta. Even though no branches seemed to sway when she walked past them, her newfound friend, the amiable wind, seemed to follow her wherever she went, forming a cocoon around her, helping calm her. It reminded her of when her mother would slip her a chili pepper to chew on the most blistering of days, cooling her from the inside out. She slipped on her mother's necklace and felt a different kind of coolness from the stone against her hot skin. She wasn't afraid of the necklace anymore, even if it was a peculiar shade of jade. As the sun slipped past her, disappearing for the night, she could feel the necklace settling in, becoming comfortable with its new home. Later that night, when they buried her mother, she wrapped her hand around the jade necklace and realized that her biggest fear in life was not the impending loneliness or trying to make a living for herself, nor was it about the war. Her biggest fear was that her mother was wrong about her. Could she be prepared for the kind of sacrifice that came along with being a mother? She didn't have an answer for this question for the span of her life, up until the moment she knew when it was her time to go. Mrs. Li Mingzong's own psychic, an old Vietnamese woman who was once famous at the temples in Hoi An, had told her that this was the year her body would be unable to process food properly, that she'd slowly stop eating one day, and very soon after, her body would surrender itself entirely. After 49 days, her soul would ascend, and she would experience motherhood all over again in her next life, and all the heartbreak that comes along with it. When Mrs. Zung heard her fortune, she felt a deep satisfaction because she wouldn't have it any other way. She didn't want to experience another lifetime without being a mother. Her mother had been right about her. She had been a better mother than she had. Because the type of sacrifice that came with a mother's heartbeat was gut-wrenching, and she was prepared to give up her life over and over and over again, because it had been worth it in the end. Mrs. Zung died alone in a hospital bed at Fountain Valley Hospital. It was the same hospital where six of her granddaughters were born. Unlike their births, her death was greeted without much fanfare, aside from the beeping EKG heart monitor as her company. Her daughters weren't by her side, and her boyfriend, Bao, had gone home earlier to try to get some sleep. But she didn't want to wait or hold on anymore. Her work was done here. She knew she hadn't been a perfect mother, but she had done the best she could. And she was finally okay letting go, after holding it all in for so, so long. The last memory Mrs. Zung took with her before she departed this world was the night her firstborn daughter, Kim, showed up outside that crooked blue house in Santa Ana with two suitcases in tow, holding the hands of two little girls. Kim had come back from the dead. Before the rift happened between all her daughters, before the anger and resentment, there was that one sliver of peace and wonderment of what would happen next. The moment was buoyant, and life had finally aligned for a group of cursed, heartbroken women. It was Mrs. Zung's last happy memory, because that was the only time where all four of her daughters and all eight of her granddaughters were gathered under one roof, safe from the outside world. The house had done its job, and so had Mrs. Zung. Excuses came pouring in from all corners of the world. Priscilla Nguyen sent flowers from Seattle and had Grace, her assistant, pass along a note that she was unable to come down for the funeral because she had to prepare for a Series B round of funding, and that her presence wouldn't be missed since she didn't really know her grandmother that well. They hadn't spoken in a decade. Thuy Nguyen couldn't make it because a celebrity client had an inflammation breakout that she needed help with before her big movie began filming. It was the actress's only shot at an Oscar nomination. But she would stop by the temple over the weekend. Tao Nguyen sent flowers from Saigon,
texting that it was too expensive for her to come home at the last minute, but that she was thinking of everyone, and this was all followed by a bunch of sad emojis. Joyce Pham sent flowers from New York City, saying that she had run out of paid time off, but that she was sorry and she wished she had known her grandmother better. Elaine and Christine Lum dropped off food at the temple for the memorial, but they didn't stay long either, as they both hadn't spent much time with their grandmother, and they needed to run the nail salon and the coffee shop while their mother was helping with the funeral arrangements. Lily Leung, also in Seattle for graduate school, and an internship at Priscilla's company, had sent flowers as well, and expressed sadness because her grandmother had helped raise her, but she had just started her internship and didn't have that much time to take a leave of absence. But maybe one day she'd meet the rest of her half-cousins and half-aunties. It just wouldn't be today. And as usual, Lily's younger sister, Rosie, was off smoking weed somewhere, unbothered by all of this, because in her mind, death was just another destination in the journey, you know? All eight grandchildren wouldn't be attending the funeral, despite all of them being the last thought their grandmother had. But she already knew they wouldn't come. Mrs. Li Mingzung had left very clear instructions on how she wanted her funeral to be, and if they strayed from one detail, her spirit would know. She wrote down what type of food to serve, which photo to use, what outfit she wanted to be buried in, and even which of her favorite monks from her favorite temple was to preside over her funeral. Then she left a map of where all her gold bars, jewelry, and cash were hidden in the house, along with a will, requesting that all her daughters be present when the will was read out loud. And she meant all her daughters, having circled it several times for extra emphasis in her letter. All four of them, no exceptions. Mrs. Mai Nguyen, Mrs. Ming Pham, and Mrs. Quyen Lum arrived at the temple separately. As soon as the Zung sisters spotted each other, they immediately shifted their eyes and pretended that they didn't see each other. Each one of them promised themselves that they would not be the first to crack. "She thinks I'm going to apologize first?" Mrs. Lum angrily raised an eyebrow when she passed by Mai. "Mai always wins. Every fight," Mrs. Pham grumbled to herself. "Not this time. I'm sick of always sacrificing for this family." Mrs. Nguyen scowled at her sisters from across the room. "They never appreciate me. I'm the oldest. I made the most sacrifices." "It's always my fault." Mrs. Lum closed her eyes, still full of regret for the last reunion. "Our mother passed away alone and scared. This is my fault," Mrs. Pham thought bitterly. "It's always her fault." The temple was packed to the brim. Mrs. Zung's presence in the little village of Little Saigon did not go unnoticed. She had been a formidable woman, fearless until the very end. She helped out where she could and generously redistributed her wealth. As the ceremony began, an elderly woman in her 60s approached the microphone stand. She also bore a birthmark on her right cheek, the same one as Mrs. Zung had. Mai gasped and gripped her chair. "Kính thưa quý gia đình và bạn bè gần xa," she said, greeting everyone and asking them all to take their seats. "My name is Kim, Kim Leung. I am Li Mingzung's firstborn daughter. Thank you all for coming today. My mother was an incredible woman, silent and humble in her bravery. She loved her community and her family fiercely, until the very end. It had been 10 years since Mai saw her half-sister, Kim. This was the woman she'd been competing with the last 20 years, ever since she came back from the dead. The woman who took the little blue house in Santa Ana away from her. As she watched Kim talk about their mother and all the memories they had together in the past decade, Mai's anger was replaced with grief. These were time and memories that Mai could never get back. She glanced down at her own wrinkled hands, wondering if it was too late with her own daughters as well. Daughters who didn't call her back or come down to see her in her moment of grief. She was unsure if their relationship was irreparable or not. She'd been focused on the wrong things, meddling in all the wrong things. The funeral, the pregnancy, the wedding, the grandson. She'd been focused on the wrong predictions. Because maybe Auntie He was only right about one thing. Maybe this was the year Mai really could lose everything. During the burial, they placed a bowl of rice, paper money, Mrs. Zung's reading glasses, and several weeks' worth of newspapers on top of her coffin so that she'd have some entertainment on her journey to the next life. After the funeral, the family gathered back at the temple to assemble her altar for the next 49 days. Mai lit incense, Ming scooped out a fresh bowl of rice and veggies, and Quyen arranged some fruits and snacks. And finally, Gim joined them to place a black and white photo of their mother at the center of the altar. A younger Mrs. Zung wore her signature jade Buddha necklace. Her eyes were less wrinkled, and her aozai clung to her youthful body, which accentuated all her subtle curves. In this photo, capturing a long-forgotten moment, Mrs. Zung didn't look like a survivor, a dutiful wife, or a mother. She looked like a woman. None of the four sisters spoke as they worked quietly and efficiently on their mother's altar. They fussed over it, down to the placement, making sure that it followed feng shui protocols. Their grief manifested into productivity. They set out to ensure there was enough food and paper money to last the week, until someone could replace the food the following week, and the next week, and the next, until their mother's soul completed the journey to her next reincarnation after 49 days. Mai slapped Quyen's hand aside as she rearranged things. Quyen responded by shoving Mai away from her area and accidentally knocking Ming over. Gim tried to help Ming back up, but then Mai slapped her hand away again. Ming was after all her sister and not Gim's. Then Quyen jabbed a finger in Mai's face, and alas, all hell broke loose in front of their mother's altar, as both women refused to speak first, but resorted to slapstick ruses to communicate their feelings. Once again, everyone in Little Saigon began to take bets on who would win, because everyone knew that the Zung sisters were cursed. Meanwhile, the black and white photo of Mrs. Li Mingzung watched all four of her daughters attempting to fight through their emotions. She sighed, impatiently waiting for them to finish, waiting for one of them to invite her ancestral spirit into their home. Even though she had four daughters, and only sons were allowed to invite their ancestors home by tradition, Mrs. Zung assumed her daughters had learned at least one thing from her, and that they had enough foresight and Viet hustle to find a way to go around the damn curse. 12. Mai, Ming, Quyen, and yes, Gim. Mr. Boy, the estate lawyer, cleared his throat and pushed his glasses up the low bridge of his nose. His wrinkled forehead matched his wrinkled clothes as he brought the will closer to his face, trying to make out Mrs. Zung's faded scribbles and her most recent ones. His eyesight and memory had been failing him more than usual, and lately, his own mortality had begun scaring him, especially when so many of his elderly clients were suddenly passing away. It made him contemplate his own will, which, ironically, he had been putting off for ages due to his own superstitions. Mrs. Zung's will had been steadfast throughout the years, nothing more than minor changes here and there. Only when her brood of granddaughters did something rather exceptional would she reach out to Mr. Bui to tweak the will. She had allocated gold bars for Lily when she got into her PhD program, jewelry pieces for Priscilla after she received her MBA, and a book of her favorite Buddhist quotes for Joyce because, well, she could use the guidance. Elaine got her furs. It seemed appropriate for her aesthetic. Twi inherited her library collection, while Tao got a random grab bag of gold bars, books, and jewelry because she was a mystery to her. Rosie and Christine each got a small pile of cash and prepaid tutor lessons to help with their terrible Vietnamese language skills. Mrs. Zung, of course, had seasonal favorites to match her capricious moods, not so secretly pitting each granddaughter against the other. Like a horse race, each horse moving up a level depending on who reached out to her the most. But during the estrangement, the race became void as a majority of her granddaughters stopped reaching out to her. Whether they did it out of respect for their mothers or they were forced to, she couldn't tell. Meanwhile, the will remained untouched, gathering dust for 10 years, until a month ago, out of the blue, Mrs. Zung called Mr. Boyd to her home to make a few adjustments. Mrs. Zung had expressed that her last will and testament be read at the little blue house in Santa Ana, where her firstborn daughter, Kim Lung, still resided. She said that if all four of her daughters were not gathered there, then no one was to get anything, and her wealth would be redistributed among charities in Little Saigon. After the burial, all four sisters gathered reluctantly at the house, still a bit battered and bruised after the fight at the temple. Their fake Louis bags were neatly lined up on the living room coffee table. Mrs. Quyen Lam and Mrs. Kim Lung were both hunched forward, sitting as far away as possible from each other without falling off the couch. Mrs. Ming Pham was busy wrestling in the kitchen. The sound of clinking glasses echoed through the house. Mrs. Mai Nguyen walked around the house as all the memories that she tried to erase flooded back. This house that had once belonged to her, where her children had grown up, was unrecognizable as her half-sister's home now. Gim was a stranger to her, and so was this home. Mai felt her age pressing against her knees as she toured the living room and saw the corner where Priscilla took her first steps, the bathroom where Thuy often went to hide from the rest of the family and read her books, and the garage where Tao played make-believe with her stuffed animals role-playing as international spies. When she turned the corner, she saw the downstairs bedroom nearest to the staircase, and her eyes began to well, remembering the room where her three daughters, herself, and her husband shared the same bed for years. Most nights, Mai and Tang slept on the floor, while her daughters took the bed. As she moved past the kitchen, she could see the old looming orange tree in the backyard, peeking at her through the window. The tree had stood the test of time, unlike their family. Mai lingered, afraid of the memories that came with an orange tree in Orange County. Flashes of her three daughters and her nieces seeking shelter under it, covering their ears from all the yelling coming from inside the house. Mai swallowed and looked away. It finally hit her how far they'd come. It had been a simple yet chaotic life back then, but at least they were all together. Now she wasn't even sure if everyone was as happy now as they were back then. Ming came out of the kitchen, carrying a tray of jia tak, looking jittery. Nobody saw her slip an almost empty vial back into her purse, a vial with only one drop left in it. She walked around and passed a glass of iced kumquat tea to the estate lawyer, then passed one to each of her sisters. When she stopped in front of Mai, she handed the biggest glass to her and stared at her intensely, not moving until Mai got annoyed. "Why are you hovering, Ming?" Mai hissed. "Go sit down." "It's really hot outside," Ming said. "You should drink all of this. All of it. In one gulp. It'll help you cool down." "Why do you suddenly care about my health?" Mai scoffed, sitting down. "What do you want? A parade for making us drinks? Money? A new husband?" "I'm not moving until you drink this tea. For the love of Buddha, drink the damn tea." Quyen growled at her two sisters, breaking her silence. "Otherwise, we'll be here longer than an American occupation." "I'm not thirsty. Why are you being so weird?" The three sisters broke out in another fight, as both Kim and Mr. Boy watched, horrified. Kim attempted to shrink herself as her three half-sisters began to claw over each other. Her face grew redder and redder as the shouting around her escalated, until her usual composed temperament cracked. "Just drink it!" Kim shouted. "No wonder you all put Maya into an early grave. She had to die to escape all of you and get some peace." The room was instantly silenced. Mai opened her mouth to snap back at her, but something in her stopped. What really was there left to say? Ming watched with wonderment as Mai swallowed her fighting words, picked up the glass, and began drinking it. Ming reached out and tipped the glass further up, forcing Mai to finish the whole glass. She shot Ming a dirty look above the glass, but kept drinking until the tea was gone. Mai's nose wrinkled, and she curiously peered into the empty glass, wondering if Ming's cooking skills had gotten worse. Ming breathed a sigh of relief and finally took her place on the couch next to her sister's.
"Thank you all for coming," Mr. Bui said cautiously.
His hands gripped the glass, unsteadily bringing the iced kumquat tea to his lips, afraid to witness another squabble break out among the women.
"I am here to read the last will and testament of Mrs. Li Mingzong."
He plopped a tin box onto his lap and pulled out a stack of letters, an assortment of trinkets, gold bars, and jewelry.
"To all my daughters, I've left a letter to each of you, explaining how much you meant to me. Even when you thought I couldn't see you, I want you to know that I always did. A mother sees everything," he continued, his voice becoming a mouthpiece for Mrs. Zung's spirit.
He coughed and strained his eyes again to continue.
"I also have written a letter to my first great-grandchild, whom I know will be born this year. I know that I will not be alive to witness their birth, but I already feel their presence. They're waiting to open their eyes to this world, as I close mine."
Ming, Quyen, and Mai quickly glanced at each other and gasped.
"How did she know?"
Ming whispered.
"Dai Ai, is everyone seeing this psychic in Kauai?"
Quyen moaned.
"I've never been able to physically or verbally express my love in the way you all needed me to," the lawyer continued. "But that didn't mean that I didn't love you all deeply. Even when your backs turned against me, I still kept loving you all from afar."
The lawyer got up and passed a letter to each woman. When he returned to the front of the living room, he continued reading Mrs. Zung's letter.
"The jade Buddha necklace that has been passed down from generation to generation, starting with Wang Zung, is ready to be passed down once again. Traditionally, I should pass it on to my firstborn daughter, but I've made too many mistakes between Mai and Kim and consider them both my firstborn. I've addressed the daughter who shall receive the necklace in a letter. You will know who it is when you read your own."
All four sisters gripped their letters, trying their best to hold back their tears.
"They say that the firstborn daughter is the hardest to raise. I was lucky to have two firstborn daughters. I've spent the last 20 years trying to make it up to Kim for abandoning her back in Vietnam. And now I'm finally able to spend the next 20 years of Mai's life making it up to her, for forcing her to give up the house that you're all currently sitting in."
Mr. Bui stopped reading and rummaged through the tin box until he pulled out a set of keys. He walked over to Mai and handed it to her. A confused Mai looked at the keys, then at her sisters.
"I've been instructed to stop reading the will here," Mr. Bui announced. "I will finish the second half at the next location Mrs. Zung requested we move to. I'll drive everyone to the next destination. So if you can all please gather your belongings."
Confused, the sisters retrieved their fake Louis and asked the lawyer where the next destination was. They all assumed it'd be back at their mother's favorite temple, but instead, he gave them an address that was all the way across town. The sisters groaned about the traffic.
"That's so far,"
Quyen moaned.
"Only white people go over there."
"I never go to that side of town," Ming said, confused.
"How does Mai even know it exists?"
Keys still in hand, Mai didn't say anything. She then looked up and met Geem's eyes. And this time, there was no animosity, regret, or resentment between them.
They both knew what their mother had done for them, because only firstborn daughters could understand the shared responsibility of being a second mother to the rest of the family. In her final moments as a mother, Mrs. Zung had made sure that the past had been taken care of, as well as the future. She finally fixed her one regret and created generational wealth for her daughters and her granddaughters, so they never had to rely on a man for anything ever again. The winding, cobbled road made Mr. Bui's creaky Toyota rattle the women up, down, and sideways as they clutched their purses and grabbed on to whatever they could to steady themselves, including each other. An endless stream of complaints came out of the four sisters simultaneously.
This neighborhood is full of money, and they can't have proper streets to drive on. Where are all the taxes going? Rich people pay so much to look poor. Where are all the taxes going? This is exactly why everything should be paid in all cash.
Mr. Bui gripped the wheel tighter, praying to the Buddha that he could go home soon to have dinner with his wife of 60 years. He pressed his foot down on the pedal as he battled a steep hill. A view slowly emerged as the car haphazardly careened its way around the bend. The sisters gasped when they saw the majesty of the Pacific Ocean herself materialize. It had been a long time since they saw the water. Though they'd been in California for almost 40 years, they rarely ever went to the beach. They never felt comfortable being on these shores. The water reminded them too much of what life could have been like had they never left their coasts near the South China Sea. The lawyer drove through the neighborhood, past mansions, bungalows, craftsmen's, and modern renovated townhomes. The only common denominator was that all houses overlooked the vast, mysterious ocean. Though the women saw no connection between this ocean and the ocean they had grown up with, they acknowledged that even waves on the other side of the world would eventually find their way here, just like they did. Mr. Bui parked under an old sycamore tree and ushered the women out of the car. He then led them toward the smallest house on the block, which looked untouched by time, except for the fading green front door. The door looked like it had welcomed friends more than strangers over the years. He coughed and motioned for Mai to open the door. Right, the keys. "Welcome home, daughter," he said as he unfolded Mrs. Zung's letter to finish reading. "All I've ever wanted was for you to be safe. At the time, safe meant to get married and have a home. Protection against society and protection against the wind. The two things that women needed to survive. When Gim came back into our lives, I had nothing to give to her at that time. So I had to give her and my two granddaughters protection from the wind. I hope you find peace at your age, in a small house by the water that has four walls and a roof. And one day, you can pass this home to your daughters to keep them safe." He looked up from the letter and saw trembling Mai. Behind her, all her sisters were sobbing quietly, slowly inching their way toward each other. Uncomfortable, he shifted his weight and avoided eye contact and kept reading. He wasn't used to seeing Vietnamese women show vulnerability. It was rather unnerving. "As for the house in Santa Ana, I hope you can all understand why I gave the house to Kim. I thought I had lost her in the war, but when she showed up on our front steps 20 years ago, I knew that even ghosts and spirits would always need a place to come home to. I hope you can all forgive me one day and invite my spirit to come into your home every once in a while. We've spent the last decade apart. I hope to make up for lost time in the future. Your mother, always, even when you didn't want me to be." The lawyer paused. Much to his surprise, he saw that all four Zung sisters were now holding hands. He blinked a few times, unsure if his eyesight was failing him again. Without proof, no one in Little Saigon would ever believe him if he recounted this moment, especially if he were to say that the Zung women had finally made up.
finally giving some relief to the village, who had no choice but to hear about the family drama for years. Mai wiped her tears. She put the key into the lock, opened up the perennial green door, and stepped over the entrance and into possibility. Days after, Mai felt very strange. At first, she thought she just wasn't hungry. Then she thought maybe she was too hungry. Not since menopause did she experience such fluctuation. Her mood swings and her body weren't aligned. She whipped out her old bamboo fan, a relic from those days, to fan herself at night in front of the TV, watching her soaps, hoping to bring some balance back between her yin and yang. Mai was empty inside. Everywhere she went, and even when she slept, she carried the keys to the house with the green door in her pocket. There was nothing she wanted to ask the woman in Kauai anymore. Because what came after death? What could Auntie Hua say that could help her overcome her staggering grief? None of her predictions could have ever prepared her for the kind of pain swallowing her whole. Unlike her mother, who left the world at peace, Mai was full of regrets. Regrets about the last 10 years, the last 20 years, and regrets about her daughters. Was it too late to fix her relationship with her daughters? For 49 days, Mai sat in the parking lot at the temple, inside her car, for hours and hours, from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. From the moment the place opened and closed, she waited, taking a few breaks throughout to pray at her mother's altar and pick at some food the monks would bring out to her. She didn't know who to call. Not her daughters, not her ex-husband, not that she could ever rely on him anyways. Everyone seemed to have abandoned her, or was simply too busy. She went to the temple every day to distract herself by cleaning her mother's altar. Routine became her companion. Grief was funny in that way. At 5 a.m. on the dot, she'd wake up and say her prayers for an hour. Then she'd drive to the temple, park under the big eucalyptus trees, and she would cry some more. At least she wasn't crying in her empty home. She was crying in an empty parking lot. She was full of unanswered questions that only a mother had answers for, and she longed for a ghost that was not of this world anymore. She felt small, nothing more than a forgotten soul living on a pale blue dot. So, for 2 weeks, after the funeral, and after the will was read, she was utterly alone. Until one day, the third sister, Mrs. Lum, opened the passenger door, climbed in quietly, and held her hand as she cried. Mrs. Lum did it again the next day, then the next. Soon, Mrs. Pham came and crawled into the back seat, and the three of them sat together in that car in silence, allowing Mai to cry. Then one day, out of the blue, Mrs. Leung opened the other back door and joined them. For once, no one argued, bragged, boasted, or exaggerated. Not over money, not over property, not over whose daughter was more successful, and especially not over who was to blame for causing the family estrangement in the first place. Mrs. Nguyen cried buckets for 49 days, until her mother completed her journey into her next body, and she didn't feel so alone anymore. 13. Elaine Lum. A slightly hungover Elaine Lum walked into the dimly lit coffee shop and breezed past all the Vietnamese girls wearing bikinis, who were walking around in 6-inch heels, holding trays upon trays of coffee and boba tea orders. A group on their break were casually leaning over the counter, gossiping and complaining about their love lives and the horrors of online dating. She nonchalantly walked past tables full of ogling boys pretending to be men, and men pretending to be boys, and a table packed with curious tourists debating if it would be insulting to not look the women in the eyes. She continued to be undeterred by the half-naked women moonlighting as baristas, like they were caricatures inside a Bukowski novel, or any other novel written by a white man determined to figure out what makes women, women. The Vietnamese bikini coffee shop that Elaine managed had a sentient neon pink sign that flashed, "Girls, girls, girls," over the counter. But she had become immune to it all, because to her, it was just another ordinary Monday morning in Little Saigon.
"Where the hell have you been?"
Christine, her younger sister, whined when Elaine burst into the back room and removed her sunglasses. Her sister's voice was extra irritating this morning.
"I've been stuck here since 7 a.m. Old Man Chu is literally slobbering in the corner again. I am not going out there and cleaning up his shit like some underpaid caretaker. The man should be in a nursing home, watching Fox News or whatever. But instead, he's always in here, open till close, sipping the same damn coffee cup, like some cheapskate, and eye-fucking all the girls and leaving no tips. Also, don't dicks stop working after 40? Like, why even bother at his age?"
Elaine's migraine took a beating every time Christine's voice raised an octave. Rolling her eyes, she removed her rabbit fur vest and unhooked her fake Gucci waist bag to hang up on the coat rack. Her waist-length black hair cascaded down like a sleek waterfall, and her thick thighs felt watery from the 6 tequila shots she took last night. She had no idea why she drank so much at Sunday night poker. She was pushing 30, and was the only unmarried one of her friend group, and yet she still pretended like her body was forever frozen at 21.
"Christ, calm down. I'm here now. You can dip out in a bit. Just make sure you do a last check around the main floor before leaving. Is Matt coming in today?"
Christine shrugged, her eyes glued to her phone.
"I don't know. I think she's still busy with, like, the funeral, burial stuff, or whatever. She's always at the temple now, doing those weird Buddhist rites."
Her acrylics made tap, tap, tap noises on her phone screen as she scrolled through her feed, sending off hearts and likes into the ether. She looked up, quizzically.
"Oh my God. Dude, when our mother dies, would we have to do all those rites for her?"
Elaine threw a towel at her face.
"Don't say things like that out loud."
She chastised her in a way that only older sisters could.
"Would you stop?"
Christine cried out, throwing the towel back at her. She smoothed her blonde balayage bangs.
"I just did my makeup."
"What'd you do last night? You didn't come home till late," Elaine asked suspiciously, leaning against the counter. "You better be careful about your partying. At the rate you're going to end up like one of those sad Asian girls that just end up sucking Kevin Nguyen type dicks forever.
Like, you're not already one of those sad Asian girls? You can't even bag yourself a Kevin Nguyen if you tried.
Why do you care anyways? I was just smoking weed with Rosie and that whole group," Christine said, a casual boredness in her voice, her Orange County accent coming out in full force.
"It's not a big deal."